It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
A man claiming to be a senior Lord's Resistance Army member surrenders to U.S. forces. The Pentagon says Al-Shabaab in Somalia remains a serious threat. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. U.S. forces operating in Africa have taken into custody a man claiming to be a senior leader of the notorious Lord's Resistance Army. He turned himself in Central African Republic. U.S. forces are operating alongside the African Union's Regional Counter-LRA Task Force. A U.S. State Department spokesperson Tuesday said efforts to establish a full and positive identification of the alleged defector are underway. The U.S. has offered up to $5 million for information leading to his capture. He's wanted by the International Criminal Court for alleged war crimes and crimes against humanity. One of five LRA leaders wanted by the court, including the group's top commander, Joseph Kony. The LRA blamed for killing and kidnapping tens of thousands across four African countries over the past 30 years. The U.S. Defense Department Tuesday said it's still assessing the result of last week's airstrike that killed Al-Shabaab intelligence chief Talil Abdishakur. It follows another U.S. airstrike in September that killed Al-Shabaab's previous leader, Ahmed Abdi Ghoddani. Admiral John Kirby is a Pentagon spokesman.
But clearly, when you go after targets that have significant leadership responsibility, such as the two that you've mentioned, you know you're going to have a significant impact on their ability to communicate, coordinate, operate, finance themselves. I mean, all that's factored into it. In fact, that's part of the calculus that goes into the decision to strike or not to strike, is the legitimacy of the target and the significance of the individual.
Admiral Kirby says Al-Shabaab remains a serious security threat as it seeks to deepen ties with Al-Qaeda and expects U.S. forces to act in a similar way. This is VOA News. Thousands of Central African Republic refugees continue to flow across the border into Cameroon, fleeing sectarian violence. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports.
Every Central African I met here at the Giwa Yagombo refugee camp in eastern Cameroon has a story of horror, pain and trauma. Francis Dengo lost his wife in the sectarian violence before escaping the Central African Republic. He says he continues to get bad news from his country. He says he has just been informed his cousin was shot dead and the rest of his family sought refuge in the Bangui Bimbo St. Mark Major Seminary. But what is more important for him now is his survival in Cameroon. The influx of refugees into Cameroon has dropped from 10,000 a week to about 8,000 people per week, according to the UN Refugee Agency. Some humanitarian agencies, like the Cameroon Red Cross, say the drop is because those suffering from malnutrition cannot make the long and difficult journey to Cameroon. The UNHCR estimates there are now more than 200,000 CAR refugees in Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Eastern Cameroon.
Nigeria's Chief of Defense Staff Tuesday acknowledged the headquarters of a multinational military force near the border with Chad was captured last weekend by Islamist extremists. Air Chief Marshal Alex Bada told reporters only Nigerian troops were at the base in Baga when insurgents launched their attacks Saturday. Witnesses say the troops fought valiantly for several hours before running out of ammunition. Asked if the military would retake the base, the defense official responded, "Why not?" but declined to say more. Meanwhile, three state governors in Nigeria's troubled northeast have asked President Goodluck Jonathan to deploy more forces ahead of next month's national elections. Energy giant Royal Dutch Shell has agreed to a multi-million dollar settlement to compensate thousands of Nigerian fishermen over two oil spills back in 2008. The Anglo-Dutch firm has agreed to pay out more than $83 million to the people in Bodo in southern Nigeria. The leaks on the Bomubani pipeline were said to be caused by operational failures. Mozambican police on Tuesday arrested a senior RENAMO official, the country's largest opposition party, on charges of inciting violence amid renewed political tensions between the former rebel group and the ruling Frelimo party. Antonio Muchango was arrested on the outskirts of the capital city, Maputo. He was released a few hours later. RENAMO has alleged widespread fraud and irregularities following last October's election won by Frelimo. Mr. Muchango had called for nationwide demonstrations. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, the 7th day of January, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A senior commander of the Uganda rebel group, Lord's Resistance Army, has reportedly surrendered.
The victims of the Lord's Resistance Army's brutality throughout northern Uganda, Democratic Republic of Congo, and the Central African Republic really deserve to see justice served. And Ongwen's surrender means an opportunity for that.
Halle Dranginis is a policy analyst on the LRA for the U.S.-based Enough Project. Governments and competitors cooperate to produce an Ebola virus vaccine. Zimbabwe nurses are threatening a strike action next Monday if their end-of-year bonuses are not paid. And Libya appeals for Arab help as terror concerns grow.
Libya is a huge exporter of terror, arms, illegal migrants to Europe. It is a force for destabilization in the Sahel region, in North Africa, in the southern Mediterranean, and the Middle East.
Jason Park is president of LibyaAnalysis.com, and this year's graduate exam results reflect progress but continuing challenges for South Africa's education system. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. An official of the U.S.-based Enough Project says the reported surrender of a top Lord's Resistance Army LRA commander is a significant development in the effort to finally bring LRA leader Joseph Kony and other senior commanders to justice for crimes against humanity. Dominic Ongwen, believed to be a protege of Kony, turned himself in to U.S. forces who are helping the Joint African Union Regional Task Force in the hunt for the LRA. State Department spokesperson Jan Psaki said Tuesday that efforts to establish a full and positive identity of Ongwen were underway. Halle Dranginis is a policy analyst on the LRA and the Democratic Republic of Congo for the U.S.-based Enough Project. She said Ongwen's defection will have a major psychological impact on other LRA commanders.
It really signals a further weakening of the Lord's Resistance Army. It also really signals and triggers an opportunity for justice for victims. The victims of the Lord's Resistance Army's brutality throughout northern Uganda, Democratic Republic of Congo, and the Central African Republic really deserve to see justice served. And Ongwen's surrender means an opportunity for that.
Your organization thinks that eventually there should be justice. How does justice come?
Well, the ICC has indicted both Kony and Ongwen for multiple counts of war crimes and crimes against humanity, including the widespread murder of civilians, enslavement of civilians, including children, as well as pillage of personal property, especially in IDP camps. We know that he and his forces oversaw some really brutal acts, especially against some of the most vulnerable populations in this region. The ICC has had years to amass robust evidence against these individuals, interviewing witnesses and victims.
Now, your organization is accusing Joseph Kony and the LRA of what, illicit trafficking? Any proof of that?
We've done extensive interviews with defectors who were once within the ranks of the Lord's Resistance Army in Congo and the Central African Republic and formerly in northern Uganda, who say that when they were in the ranks of the LRA, have been involved in illegal trafficking of diamonds and gold as well as ivory, that orders to traffic those natural resources and to steal those natural resources came from Kony himself. We know from multiple sources, again, that this is a group that uses natural resources to fund their activities and their atrocities.
Earlier this year, I think there was a report that a senior commander of the LRA had been captured. What does this say in terms of the hunt for Joseph Kony? The African Union forces, are they making progress?
Yeah, these events really show that the counter-LRA mission is working, that we need to keep up this mission and really continue the support. It's a really comprehensive effort by multiple governments in the region along with the United States. And that comprehensive approach, that cooperation across borders is really proving to weaken the group and more efforts are needed. But this is really a benchmark in the fight against the LRA and the fight against atrocities in general.
Could it be that another sovereign country is harboring Joseph Kony? Because why has it been so difficult to get him?
A lot of the areas of especially the Central African Republic and South Sudan have been safe havens for Joseph Kony. And for logistical and political reasons, a lot of those areas are hard to reach. So more progress is needed to give that mission the mandate and the capacity to reach those safe havens where Joseph Kony and his forces hide.
Holly Draginis is a policy analyst for the U.S.-based Enough Project on the LRA and the Democratic Republic of Congo. She was speaking with me from Washington, D.C. As Libya's official government asks for military help to tackle rival militias, analysts warn that the country is on the verge of breaking apart. There are also fears over Libya's role as an exporter of terror amid reports of growing links between Islamist militants in the country and the group Islamic State. Henry Richwell reports from London.
A US-made Reaper drone taxis towards the runway at the newly built French military base in Madama, Niger. Paris has ordered three more drones to counter the growing terror threat from Libya, which lies 100 kilometres to the north. It has become the major source of destabilisation in the region, says the president of the group LibyaAnalysis.com, Jason Pack.
Libya is a huge exporter of terror, arms, illegal migrants to Europe. It is a force for destabilization in the Sahel region, in North Africa, in the southern Mediterranean, and the Middle East.
Libya's internationally recognized government is based in the eastern city of Tobruk after it was forced out of the capital in August. A rival administration supported by Islamist fighters now controls Tripoli and the port city of Misrata. Monday, at an emergency meeting of the Arab League, the Tobruk government appealed for military help. Aguila Saleh Issa is president of the Libyan Council of Deputies. Addressing League members, he said, "I officially request the Arab League to intervene to protect the vital institutions in the whole of Libya and to prevent those terrorist groups from using violence in Libya." Egypt and the United Arab Emirates are supporting the Tobruk government militarily and have carried out airstrikes on Islamist militant positions, says Jason Pack.
This is an unwinnable conflict between the Tobruk government and the Tripoli government. Fueling in more arms on one side or another is going to drive the country more towards chaos.
The rival governments and their allied militias are battling for the biggest oil reserves in Africa, and that could split Libya, says analyst John Hamilton of the group Cross Border Information.
The threat of an actual partition of Libya is greater than it's ever been. The split of Libya will not necessarily come from a battle on some dividing line in the middle of the desert. It's going to come through a conflict over control of these incredibly valuable resources.
The United Nations has been trying to mediate talks, but they were postponed again this week. PAC says there are no bargaining chips to bring the rivals to the negotiating table.
It's difficult to mediate a solution when both sides think that they can win the conflict militarily.
Security services are concerned about the growing influence of the terror group Islamic State in Libya. ISIS, as it is also known, has sent a senior commander to Libya to forge alliances with Islamist militias. 3.5 years after the ouster of Muammar Gaddafi, analysts say the loose coalition of rebels that spearheaded the revolution has completely splintered, and the rival militias are threatening the very future of Libya. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Nurses in the Zimbabwe capital, Harare, are threatening to go on strike January 12 if they do not receive their end-of-year bonuses. The nurses, who are all members of the Zimbabwe Nurses Association, accused the government of reneging on earlier promises to give them their bonuses. It was not immediately clear whether nurses in other towns and cities will follow suit. But Enoch Dongo, the Harare chair of the Zimbabwe Nurses Association, says the nurses are serious about their threat to go on strike.
Harare Province relatives are very disappointed by the failure by government to pay bonuses on time. They take nurses for granted. Nurses were at work during holidays, serving life, but the government decided not to respect that. This was written by the issue of a circular to all government hospitals in Harare, which said bonuses were going to be paid on the 2nd of January, and this did not happen. So, in my view, this is a grossly unacceptable for the government to issue payment circular to the nurses and nurses go to the bank and get nothing. That is taking nurses for granted, for sure. Nurses have children who are supposed to go to school next week. they decided as a province, another province, to give government up to Friday, the 9th of January 2014, to pay those bonuses. The failure to do that, come Monday, the 12th of January 2014, our members will withdraw their services.
How much are you looking at per nurse?
Yeah, we're expecting around $500, from $450 to $500, depends on the grade of nurses, of the junior nurses, senior nurses, the assistant judges, matrons. So we don't expect any changes as far as the calculation of bonus is concerned. We need to know that they just calculate your basic salary and the allowances, and they combine those two. If they combine the basic salary and the allowances, they come up with around $500 for the next.
Enoch Dongo is the Zimbabwe Nurses Association Harare chairman. He was speaking with reporter Untungamile Nkomo of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Today is Wednesday, January 7th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. The worst Ebola outbreak in history is in its second year, and scientists around the world are working to develop a vaccine against the virus. Since December of 2013, when the Ebola outbreak began in West Africa, the World Health Organization says more than 20,000 people have been infected with the virus, and of those, more than 8,000 people have died. VOA's Carol Pearson reports on two vaccines that are being developed.
These researchers are working on a vaccine that could be among the first to be used in West Africa's Ebola epidemic. This laboratory near Rome is owned by pharmaceutical giant GlaxoSmithKline, or GSK. Several teams are working on Ebola vaccines. All say they have sped up the production process because of the urgent need and the number of lives at risk. In November, GSK said the first trial of this vaccine was well tolerated and produced an immune response in all of the 20 healthy adult volunteers who received it. The GSK vaccine promotes the production of antibodies and also triggers an immune response of certain cells that destroy the infected cells. Dr. Ricardo Cortese heads this laboratory.
The Ebola virus can't be kept under control by a vaccine that stimulates antibodies only. There is solid evidence that traditional vaccines are not enough. Our vaccine, instead, also stimulates another important branch of the immune system, the one that stimulates killer T cells that are able to recognize infected cells. The combination between two strategies is effective against Ebola.
GSK says more trials are still needed before the vaccine will be ready for widespread use. Merck, another pharmaceutical giant, announced it's resuming trials of a vaccine known by the code name VSV-Zevov. A trial of this vaccine was suspended last month after some of the volunteers reported having mild joint pain. Trials are continuing with a lower dose of the potential vaccine. The situation in West Africa has created unusual partnerships.
There's three issues I'd like to quickly touch on.
At a recent forum in Washington, Dr. Julie Gerberding, the president of Merck, said even rival pharmaceutical companies are working together.
There's some very special partnerships that are going on here, and one of them is the partnership between people who are traditionally competitors.
Several potential vaccines are being developed and are now in clinical trials. This increases the possibility of developing at least one that is effective against Ebola. And if more than one is effective, so much the better. It would increase the chances that large numbers of people could be immunized and bring the outbreak to an end. It could also mean there would never again be another Ebola epidemic as bad as this one. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
The South African government announced this week this year's graduate exam results, revealing a decline in the number of passing students. The nation's education system has struggled for two decades to overcome entrenched inequalities handed down from the apartheid system. While the drop in passing students garnered criticism, observers from a leading South African advocacy group say the numbers do not tell the entire story. Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
More than 600,000 South African high schoolers have been eagerly awaiting this week's announcement of their matriculation exam grades, results that could determine their futures. But they are not the only ones using this vital grade to assess their worth. The matriculation exam results, called matric, reflect on the broader performance of this nation, which has for decades struggled to free its educational system from the legacy of the unequal apartheid regime. This year's matric exams were the first to be taken by students who were educated under a new set of guidelines that aim to improve students' core skills and give teachers more concrete guidance. Here is Basic Education Minister Angie Motshekga announcing the hotly awaited results.
The national pass rate of the class of 2014 is 75.8% and sadly has a drop of 2.5 percentage points. I thought we were all going to be sad because I was quite sad over the Christmas period.
Well, not quite. The Basic Education Minister's basic math was slightly off there. The actual drop was 2.4 percentage points, down from 2013's pass rate of 78.2%. Officials were quick to use the figures for their own political advantage, with President Jacob Zuma praising the results, but opposition politicians saying that they show serious deficiencies in the education system. The nation's education department has had a difficult ride in recent years, hitting a particularly low point in 2012, when it came to light that the department had failed to deliver 500,000 textbooks to one of the nation's poorer provinces, Limpopo. Motshekga referenced that scandal in Monday night's speech, calling it a delivery delay, and lauding the province for defying those challenges to improve its pass rate this year by 1.1%. The real story behind the results, says education advocate Nombulelo Niatela, is probably somewhere in the middle of those opposing narratives. She is a spokeswoman for the advocacy group Equal Education and says the matric numbers do not paint a complete picture.
There's a huge focus on the matric results as a yardstick to measure the quality of education in South Africa. And we're saying that it's not an accurate measurement because we have a vast number of other assessments, but we must also use other indicators. We need to be careful about using the matric pass rate as the only indicator for either an improvement in the education system or a decline in the education system.
She says those include things like classroom resources, teacher training, literacy, and numeracy levels, all quantities she encouraged the government to focus on. She also noted that although the education sector receives the lion's share of South Africa's budget, more needs to be invested.
At a broader level, I think that there's systemic problems that surround basic education, and that is, for example, the learners that don't have the resources that could possibly make them perform to their optimum. So we definitely need schools with laboratories, schools with libraries, schools with classrooms, adequate-sized classrooms, schools with spaces where learners feel secure, schools with adequate teachers so that, you know, teachers are not teaching classes of over 100 learners.
But in the end, she said, she agrees with the minister and the president in sending one important message to the next generation of South African scholars, doctors, engineers, civil servants, lawyers, and, hey, why not, journalists. Congratulations, graduates. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The International Organization for Migration is calling for action to stop the use of so-called ghost ships to transport migrants across the Mediterranean Sea to Europe. The IOM says it fears many migrants will lose their lives if this risky practice is allowed to continue. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Over the past week, more than 1,000 migrants, most fleeing conflict in Syria, had to be rescued in the Mediterranean Sea. Survivors of the two so-called ghost ships in which they were traveling say the crews aboard abandoned their ships using lifeboats after locking in the automatic pilot as the boats neared the Italian coastline. Both could have capsized with heavy loss of life, but the migrants were lucky. The first boat, carrying 736 people, made it to shore in southern Italy on New Year's Eve. The second, with 359 Syrian refugees on board, was abandoned by its crew and was towed ashore over the weekend by the European Union's Triton mission. Triton is a scaled-down version of Italy's Mare Nostrum, which rescued tens of thousands of migrants at sea before the mission was shut down at the end of October. A spokesman for the International Organization for Migration, Joel Millman, says rescued passengers reported paying between $4,000 and $8,000 to smugglers based in Turkey, which is where the voyages originated.
Obviously, we look upon this with alarm. We're concerned that with Mare Nostrum now ended and the migrations continuing at pretty high numbers through the winter in very dangerous conditions, this may be something we're going to be seeing more of in the weeks ahead.
Italian authorities report 163,368 migrants were rescued at sea through the first 11 months of 2014. This is about three times the total arriving in 2013. They say Syrians were the most numerous migrants, followed by Eritreans. IOM reports more than 3,000 migrants went missing on the Mediterranean last year, presumed drowned. It says they were crossing from North Africa when their small, unsafe boats sank or capsized. Migrants describe the so-called ghost ships as large cargo vessels, which, despite their size, are old and unsafe. Maritime experts figure such ships can be bought for between $100,000 and $150,000. At this rate, the IOM calculates that smugglers can earn more than $3 million for voyages like the two that ended in recent days, with up to 900 migrants crammed on board. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Olma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. Kenyan Janet Kisa won the women's 6-kilometer race at the IAAF cross-country permit meet in San Giorgio su Legnano in Milan, northern Italy, on Tuesday. Fellow Kenyans Perez Jepchirchir and Betsy Saina were second and third, respectively, ahead of Ethiopian Etagnen Waldo. Meanwhile, Algeria's national handball team captain Abdelmalek Slaji was voted the 2014 Algeria Sportsman of the Year, the Algerian news agency revealed in the Algerian capital Algiers on Tuesday. Slaji played a pivotal role in the Algerian triumph at the Africa Men's Handball Championships. Consequently, Algeria will be in action at the World Men's Handball Championships in Doha, Qatar, later this month. According to the same survey, Fatima Zahra Ukazi, the captain of the national women's volleyball team, was voted Algeria's 2014 Sportswoman of the Year. Ukazi captained her club side, GS Petrolia, to win the Africa Women's Club Volleyball Championships. Turning to football, Jordanian FIFA Vice President Prince Ali bin Al Hussein says he will challenge incumbent Sepp Blatter in the FIFA presidential elections, the Jordan Football Federation revealed in the Jordanian capital Amman on Tuesday. Prince Ali heads the Jordan Football Federation. He says his campaign is driven by the desire to shift the focus away from administrative controversy and back to the sport. The elections look set to be a three-way contest featuring Blatter, Frenchman Jerome Champagne, and Prince Ali. Finally, Argentine tactician Esteban Becker takes charge as coach of the Equatorial Guinea team with less than 2 weeks to the start of the 2015 Orange Africa Cup of Nations. The Equatorial Guinea Football Federation president Andres Mbomio revealed in the capital Malabo. According to Mbomio, Becker, who coached the Equatorial Guinea team that won the 2012 Africa Women's Championships, takes over from Andoni Goikotexia, who breached his contract by not joining the team currently in camp in Portugal. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Monka. Have a very good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A subsidiary of Royal Dutch Shell has paid what is thought to be the largest settlement ever offered to those affected by oil spills in Nigeria. And that's it for this Wednesday, January 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very good day.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here. Only the best on VOA Africa.